Astronomy, the stars. That's what we're going to be talking about to begin the show today. Larry Wheeler here. Great to have you along today on Wisconsin Public Radio News. We are going to be talking about the stars and astronomy with Paul Kinzer. It's great to have him back in the studio. He's the author of Stargazing Basics, Getting Started in Recreational Astronomy. He's a member of the La Crosse Area Astronomy Club. And you know what? I opened my copy of the Washington Post this morning, and the first title I saw was Why This Fall Will Be a Magnificent Time to Gaze into the Night Sky. So I think we had a perfect day to be talking with Paul. And you may have some questions as we move along today. I hope you'll join in. The number to call is 1-800-642-1234, 800-642-1234, or send an email to talk@WPR.org. That's talk@WPR.org. Paul Kinzer, good to have you back.
Yeah, I always love coming. It's great to be here.
I tell you what, fall's kind of a great time to be looking up to the sky, isn't it?
It sure is. In the summer, especially right at the peak of summer, it's only dark where we live for a few hours each night. Yeah. And now the nights are getting longer. In fact, I heard today on the radio that today is about the first day where we're really getting less sun than nighttime by 1 minute.
And it's also the air.
Yes.
It seems crisper somehow.
Exactly. The humidity, the dew points. Just in this last week, I felt like, wait, is summer lasting forever now? But now, looking at the dew points, they're getting back down into the 50s, even into the 40s. And when the dew points are lower, the air is drier and crisper, and the stars are brighter.
Yeah, they really are. And the downside for me is that I'm one of these guys that gets up early in the morning to do my jog.
And I don't get that.
So I kind of lose, 5:30 in the morning. I've got some sky, black, dark sky, but that's going to be less and less once daylight savings.
Right, that's true.
When we fall back.
But of course, the sun still will be coming up later and later. And you bring that up early morning. Right now, if you get up early morning and you look to the east, maybe not here in the Madison area, you need dark skies, but maybe with binoculars you could see this. There's a comet in the sky. And that comet, it's very difficult to kind of explain what comets do. They go around the sun, they get brighter as they do. But this comet in mid-October, instead of being up early, early morning, you have to get up about an hour before sunrise right now. But it will be in the evening sky then. And it could become bright enough to see with just your eyes.
That's A3, is it? Comet
it's,
A3?
Let me look here. I have so many notes. It's called T. Coronae Borealis, but that's kind of a mouthful. TCRB, people are calling it.
TCRB.
No, that's totally wrong. That's the other thing that's going to appear soon.
Comet A3 is what
Yeah. That's kind of what people are calling it, Comet A3. Sorry about that, folks. And it was discovered last year, and it was quite bright for how far it was away when it was discovered. And what often happens with comets is you get a lot of hype. There was a story just last week saying, it's the comet of the century. And I'm like, how do you know? The century's got a long way to go yet, for one thing. But it could be the comet of the year, maybe the comet of the decade. And comets, their brightness is really hard to predict. When it got as close as it was going to get to the sun, often what happens is comets burn up then. They're mostly made of ice. This one made it past, and now it's going away from the sun and getting dimmer as it does. But at the same time, it's getting closer to Earth. It's not going to hit us or anything like that. But as it gets closer to Earth, it will get brighter in our skies. So I'm really looking forward to it from about
the middle of October?
Yeah, the 14th to the 24th. Then you would want to look in the west, after the sun goes down.
Well, I'm I'm thinking back to the comets I've seen in my life, and there have been some dandies.
Oh, yeah, yes.
I'm thinking back. The 90s, we had, which one was it?
There were two of them, actually. Comet Hyakutake.
Yeah.
It wasn't as bright, but its tail spanned half the sky. And then there was Comet Hale-Bopp.
Hale-Bopp was the one I remember.
Yeah. I have a picture of my nieces. They're very young girls then, right in the middle of Minneapolis. And it wasn't even dark yet, and it was plain as anything. It was phenomenal. And you could see it for months.
Yeah, yeah. It was really something. I remember watching it out the window early one morning. Yeah. It was getting light, but you could still see it very, very plainly. Well, we're not going to have that with Comet A3, probably. But.
Oh, no, no. And yet, there are predictions it could get bright enough to see during the day. There are people... scientists working on that. But again, there's no way to know until it actually happens.
In the coming months, there's a number of events I think we can see without a telescope. And we'll talk about telescopes and binoculars for sure. I know you brought one, a binocular. So let's start with meteor showers.
Yeah, meteors. People, not just kids, have a real misconception. What's a meteor? It's a shooting star. They have nothing to do with stars. A meteor is usually something the size of a grain of sand to a small rock, and they're going through space, left behind usually by comets. As comets go towards the sun, they're made, people call them dirty snowballs. They're made of ice and rock, and as they melt, coming near the sun, bits of them get left behind. That's what their tails are, and every once in a while, we go through one of those debris fields left behind by a comet. When the Earth, going around the sun at a very fast speed, I mean, we're going thousands of miles per hour, and the rocks are often going in the opposite direction. When they hit our air, they heat up and they burn up and they leave a streak of light across the sky. It can take, you know, far less than a second, up to several seconds, a really big one, maybe. Every once in a while, there's one the size of, say, a bus, a school bus. They even explode. There was one over Russia in 2013, over a fair-sized city, and luckily it came in at a really shallow angle. If it would have been coming straight down, I really think maybe a million people would have been killed.
Wow.
Yeah, yeah. It blew up and knocked out thousands of windows, but it blew up in the atmosphere.
Man, Paul Kinzer, our guest today, author of Stargazing Basics, talking with him about astronomy, questions or comments, or maybe an experience to share. I hope you'll join in. Number to call, 800-642-1234. Or you could email us to talk@WPR.org, talk@WPR.org. Got one coming. It'll be later into winter, and the Geminid.
Right. The Geminid meteor shower. It's going to peak this year on December 13th and 14th. The thing about meteor showers is that's when we pass through one of these debris fields. I don't know if I was clear on that. You can see meteors almost any night. There's just stuff out there, and you go, oh, look, a shooting star. I saw one last Tuesday, a nice bright one. But when we have meteor showers, we can see dozens per hour. Unfortunately, this year, the Geminid meteor shower, there's going to be a nearly full moon in the sky when it peaks, the shower peaks, but the shower lasts for weeks. So if you go out nights before or nights after that full moon, you're likely to see things. As with anything astronomical, the further you get from artificial light, the better. So if you can get away from town, I live in a little tiny town, Galesville, 1,600 people. It's pretty dark there. I can see the Milky Way from my backyard. But if you can't, you can still see meteors. You're just not going to see the dimmer ones.
The Geminids, yeah, I'll be in northern Wisconsin, far north, like the end of November.
I believe it's starting around then. But even if it's not... The weird thing is there are way more meteor showers we know about now than we used to. And the reason is digital cameras. People have digital video cameras that are on all the time now. And folks started noticing, hey, there's more meteors during this time than other times. And they all seem to be coming from this this one direction. They're called the Geminids because it seems as though they're coming out of the constellation Gemini or from that direction. They're not necessarily. It's just where we are in our orbit and where they are in theirs and how we plow through them. But yeah, there are lots of them going on now almost all the time, you know, but there are nights where instead of seeing maybe one meteor every hour or two, you might see five every hour. It's always a fun thing to do. And that's not only you don't need binoculars or a telescope, you don't want them because you can't tell where in the sky a meteor is going to appear, and they only last a fraction of a second usually.
I can remember being in that northern Mayfield County in November, and just, you know, and there's no lights.
Yeah, yeah.
You're out next to the Shawamigan National Forest.
That's right, that's right. More and more parks and things, too, are hyping and trying to protect their dark skies. It's part of our heritage. And sadly, because of light pollution, we're losing that. So getting out to those places that are undeveloped and protected, one of the things to always remember is, you know, you might fish, you might hunt, you might go looking for birds, but if you're there at night, look up.
Yeah, look up for sure. Speaking of looking up, I've noticed on Facebook, on my Facebook page, I've had friends who are north, far north Wisconsin or into Canada, sending wonderful photos of northern lights.
Yeah, and that's, I'll talk about them in a minute, but that's another thing that technology has made a difference. The latest phones have amazing cameras in them now that actually, if there are northern lights going on, you can barely see them with your eye. Well, you take a picture with your phone, they can see light that our eyes can't. So some of those pictures that I've seen, I'm like, well, I saw those northern lights, but it was nothing like that. And Larry, I still don't own a smartphone, so I can't take them myself. But yeah, right now, this is another really nice thing about the sky right now is the sun is at its peak activity. The sun has an 11-year cycle, and at the peak of that cycle, if you're able to look at the sun, and of course only do that with proper eye protection, but if you can, right now there are almost always sun spots, dark spots on the sun, and those are solar storms. There's no rain or water involved, but they're magnetic and electrical and very complicated and weird, and every once in a while one of them spits some stuff off the sun, some material off the sun, and a day or two later, or three, they hit the Earth's atmosphere, and they cause the northern lights. They cause atoms up in our upper atmosphere to split, and when they come back together, they give off light, and they can be red or green. It depends on which atoms had been smacked apart, and we don't need to go into that, but they're gorgeous. And we've had some really nice ones this year. And again, the phones are showing them, and I hope getting people to go out and look more.
And again, the light makes a, I mean, if you've got light, you have.
Yeah. We can see stuff from my backyard, but there's a couple of streetlights. It's like, does anyone really need this? Light pollution is sad. We light up the night in ways we don't need to. Yeah. Again, when I was a kid, I lived in St. Paul, Minnesota. It was a big enough city. I could see a lot of stars. We had streetlights, and they made it light enough to walk. Now it seems like we want to make it as bright as day. Because we can. I wish we would get over that, and a lot of people are. Yeah. There are lighting solutions now that more and more people and cities and states even are taking part in.
Well, and direct the light down.
That's right. It's not hard. There's a place, they've changed their name. They were called the International Dark Sky Association. Now they might just be called Dark Skies International or something like that. And I'm even a member. But anyway, they work around the world to try and defeat light pollution because, again, the stars are our legacy, and not being able to see them doesn't need to happen. So.
Paul Kinzer, our guest, author of Stargazing Basics, Getting Started in Recreational Astronomy. Questions for him, give a call. The number is 642-1234, or you could email us to talk@WPR.org. I'm Larry Mueller for WPR News. Taking a look at the night sky and the stars in the sky, night or day, with our guest today, Paul Kinzer, author of Stargazing Basics. Questions for him, again, give a call. The number is 800-642-1234, or you could email to talk@WPR.org. In relationship to what we were just talking about, Paul, Megan in Black Creek emailed to say they just returned from vacation out west where they camped at some international dark sky places. The Milky Way was seen immediately upon going outside shortly after sunset. Megan looked up international dark sky in Wisconsin and only found Door County to have a dark sky spot.
Mm-hmm.
What can we do as a community to darken our skies? Is there a movement for Wisconsin to have darker skies?
Well, again, the International Dark Skies Association, they have packets that you can present to your local or county boards to show, here's what we can do to darken our skies. My little town, they installed what's called full cutoff streetlights that do mostly shine down. And that made a huge difference. And that's something that's, you know, you can download those packets for free. Go to your local meetings and talk about it. Years ago, they built a new middle school in my town, and before I ended up being on the school board, but before I was, I approached the school saying, hey, now that you're building this, can we please have lights in the parking lot that shine down and that can be turned off and that aren't on all night? And that's what they did. So, you know,
good for you.
It was right on the edge of town, and it would have been a real literal bright spot, but it doesn't have to be. You know, how many people need the parking lot lit up at 3 a.m?
Yeah, no, hardly anybody.
Yeah.
Hardly anybody, for sure. I want to talk about the moon, but I also, you brought some binoculars.
Yeah.
Talk about what you brought.
I brought binoculars that I bought a few years ago. There's a story behind that. I had a pair I really liked, and we left them in a bathroom at a national park. And so I wanted to get new ones, and I did. And they're Nikon, and typically these cost a couple of $100, but I won't do that. So I got them on sale for $100. These are excellent birding binoculars, or just, you know, whatever you want to use binoculars for. And then they're also excellent astronomy binoculars. The numbers on this are 10 by 50. And that's how binoculars are labeled. There might be 7 by 35 or 8 by 42. The numbers mean 10. The 10 means that's how much it magnifies. It makes things look 10 times bigger. And the 50 is the diameter of the lens on the front of the binoculars. The bigger that number, the more light that gets in. So you want, for astronomy, you want that number to be pretty big. You can get little binoculars, you know, that are much more portable, but they're not going to show you as much at night. But any binoculars will show you way more than your eyes can see on their own. A typical pair of binoculars, if you use just your eyes at night, you can see a couple thousand stars. If you use binoculars, you can see more than 100,000 stars. So they really make a difference. And again, for me, these are good, 10 by 50. Anything bigger than that, they're kind of hard to hold in your hands.
Yeah.
And also, if your hands shake, and they will, a little bit, no matter what, the more you magnify, the more that shake is also magnified. So 10 by 50 is good for a kind of big guy like me. 7 by 35 is also a great choice. And the one reason you might notice the ratio there, 50 divided by 10 is 5, 35 divided by 7 is 5. That number 5 is how big the little spot of light is that hits your eye.
Oh.
And at night, our eyes, the pupil in our eyes, expand to about 5 millimeters. So it's a perfect use of what you have. Now, kids are lucky. They have sort of superpowers. They get used to the dark faster than old guys like us or even any adults. And their pupil gets a little bigger, but not a lot bigger. So Yeah, 10 by 50s are great. 7 by 35s are also excellent, and they're way lighter.
A way lighter, yeah. Trevor in Viroqua, we'll give you a chance to join in. Thanks for calling.
Hey, yeah, I have a 8-inch Dobsonian-mounted SkyQuest telescope reflector.
Great.
And when I look at the moon through it, through the lenses, it part of the moon's edge is orange, and the opposite side is blue. And I was just curious where that's coming from. I also notice when I look at, like, pool lines on the bottom of a pool, those lines can also be orange on one side and blue on the other. So I'm just curious where that light is coming from.
Yeah, I kind of am too, because reflector telescopes, that's kind of what they're known for. They don't show those edges. I would maybe need to know more about the eyepieces you're using and stuff, and I don't know that we have time for that. It could also be that possibly your mirrors are not perfectly perpendicular to the line of sight. Maybe they're both turned a little bit, and that's causing a prismatic effect. I'm not really an optics expert. A reflector telescope usually doesn't do that. Sorry.
So what would Trevor, I mean, is there some place you could, Trevor or anybody else could go to say, here's my telescope. Are the mirrors positioned?
Yeah. Where is Trevor calling from?
From Viroqua.
Oh, well, you should check out your area astronomy clubs. I know there's an observatory at Wyalusing State Park, and there is an astronomy club in that area. Maybe you're even aware of it. There are experts there that if you bring it to them, I bet within 5 minutes they'll go, well, here's your problem. They'll be able to solve that for you, and they'll want to, because people join astronomy clubs because they love the sky, and they love to share the sky. So, yeah, and almost anywhere you are in Wisconsin or elsewhere, you're within not too far from an astronomy club. Call a local branch of the university or other colleges. Museums, zoos even might have some recommendations for folks. But yeah, there's somebody out there not too far from you.
Yeah. Trevor, thank you very much for calling. Appreciate it.
Sorry, I can't be more help.
Jim emailed to ask, where does the name Shakinshin Atlas originate for Comet A3. Jim said they're aware the comet was found by a lab group called Atlas, but what about, and the spelling is T-S-U-C-H-I-N-S-H-A-N, which is why I was having trouble.
Right, and which is why I didn't say it. that is a Chinese word, and I'm, I don't recall right now. I think it's an individual, but I might be wrong. Comets are named for whoever discovers them. They're about the only thing that is. People might think otherwise, but you don't get planets named after you. and meteors don't last. But comets get named for their discoverers. And there's another comet with that name that was discovered in 1965. So I don't know if this is an organization or an individual, but that's how they're named. Like Comet Hale-Bopp was named for Mr. or Ms. Bopp and a Mr. Hale, because they both kind of found it around the same time. And there are folks all the time, that's what they do. They're out there looking. I can't remember his name, but his last name is Levy. And he's found many, many comets. Comet Shoemaker Levy 9 that ran into Jupiter in 1994. He was a co-discoverer of that. Now, how cool would that be? It left spots on Jupiter for weeks. So, yeah, that's... I'm sure if you look on Google, it'll tell you who that person, however you say it, is.
All right. I love the name Hale-Bopp.
Yeah. Yes.
Was just a perfect.
Yeah, it sure was.
Not Bob Hale. Hale Bob.
Hale Bob.
Hale Bob.
Just saying it. Yeah.
It's the perfect one.
Yeah.
Well, somebody else had a question about moons, and I've lost that. But here, the people know a full moon or a new moon when they see it, but there's also a super moon and, on the other end, a micro moon.
Yeah, sure there is. the supermoon idea was made up by somebody to get clicks. the moon, it orbits the Earth, but it doesn't go around us in a circle. It goes around us in an ellipse. And there are some times when it's a bit closer to the Earth and other times when it's a bit farther away. Sometimes it's close to us when the moon is full. When it is at its closest for that year during a full moon, originally that was the supermoon, the biggest moon, biggest full moon of the year. Not a whole lot bigger. And in fact, I would challenge anyone to go look at a supermoon and be able to tell that it's any bigger. Now, you might say, oh, I can tell. Because you want to, but it doesn't mean it's true. And the micromoon was invented later, and it's the smallest full moon of the year. But here's the thing. Last month, I saw an article. This year, there will be 4 supermoons. What does that mean? That's all it means. It means the biggest full moon of the year. And it is brighter. It is bigger. Mm-hmm. But if you see 2 photos, like if you took a photo of the supermoon of the year and then the micromoon, yeah, you'd be able to see, oh, yeah, that one's bigger. But to see it with your eye, maybe I shouldn't say anything, though, because if people get out and look at the moon, that's great. I will tell you, though, the full moon is the worst time to look at the moon because it's high noon there. The shadows on the crater edges, they're gone. If you're out there when the moon isn't full and you look right at that line between night and day on the moon called the Terminator, you look with binoculars or a telescope, you'll be able to see way more detail than during the full moon. Also, the full moon washes out the light of the stars, so it's not a good night to look at anything else up there either.
Yeah, that's the trouble when you have, you know, like for meteor showers, if you've got a full moon.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But the supermoons, I read, where was it? October 17th and November 15th.
Yeah.
The second and third, quote-unquote, supermoon of this year.
And isn't it sad that this October one is going to be right when the comet is at its brightest? Why, I ought to. But you know, I shouldn't complain about the moon because it's beautiful. And it gets us out at night. And it gets us looking up. And it got people thinking about what the heck is up there.
Yeah.
So I love looking at the moon. Not so much the full moon, but I like looking at the moon. With binoculars, you can see detail. You can see the things that people named seas. They used to think those dark areas were water. And then someone looked at them with a telescope when they were invented and said, there's a crater in the middle of that ocean. I don't think that's water. So, yeah, it's a cool thing to look at.
Laurel in Coleman has something for us. Let's go there. Hi, Laurel.
Hi. I have been always wondering, our Earth rotates around and around or oblong, wherever it goes. Does the air that's around the Earth follow globe or our Earth, or does it stay still and we just keep rotating?
Well, that's what causes most of our weather. As the Earth spins, the air doesn't quite keep up, and that causes wind. And if you were to look up trade winds and other winds, you would see that they go in general directions, depending on if you're right by the equator, north of the equator, south of the equator. And if you look at maps, say, or a satellite photo that shows a hurricane, you can see that it spins. And it spins because the Earth is bigger towards the equator and it's smaller further north. So the Earth, the ground is moving faster at the equator than it is at the poles. In fact, it's barely moving at all at the poles. It takes 24 hours to spin around. But at the equator, the Earth is moving more than 1,000 miles an hour. So yes, it definitely has an effect. The air does not just turn. It does turn. Gravity holds on to it. But it doesn't go quite as fast as the ground.
And that's why we have the hurricanes in...
Right. And that's why storms in the northern hemisphere spin in one direction, and in the southern hemisphere, they spin in the other direction. But your toilet water does not go down in a different direction. That's a scam and a myth. So,
Laurel, that was a great question.
Yeah, it was. That was an excellent question. Thank you.
Thank you very much for calling. Jeff in La Crosse emailed with a couple of questions about the TCB Nova. Mm. First, Jeff believes the location has been moving from overhead earlier in the year when it might have appeared to now, just above the western horizon.
Right.
At what point will it be impossible for Jeff to see here in La Crosse?
I did some research on the star, but that I did not research. And what he's talking about is a star that's about to go nova, not supernova. It's not going to disappear. It's a people call it the blaze star, and it is a star that people noticed a couple of hundred years ago. It suddenly became bright. Usually it's so dim you can barely see it in binoculars. But it seems every 80 years it bursts into brightness and becomes easily visible to the naked eye. And I just read it's one of the 120 brightest stars. And the reason it happens is because it's actually two stars. One is called a white dwarf. People say it's like a dead star. It's what's left over after a star kind of puffs itself away, or sometimes it's even left after a supernova. It's a little ball about the size of the Earth, but with the mass of the sun. So it's got really powerful gravity. Then there's another star in this system, and it's a big red star. And the little star is pulling hydrogen from the giant star. And every 80 years, so much of that hydrogen that it gathers on itself goes there that it blows up. Oh. And it's supposed to become visible in our skies. The newest prediction is next month, October. One more reason to look up. I wish I knew. I don't have a star chart in front of me. If you download a free program called Stellarium, you can get it on your phone. And I know, Larry, there are apps you can get for your phone, too. Stellarium is a full planetarium software program, and it's free. You can get it for your computer, too. And then you can just put the date, the time, any time from 10,000 years ago to 10,000 years from now. And it'll show you what the sky looks like. And you can also put your location or any location, not just on the Earth, but even on other planets. So it's a very cool thing, and it will show you exactly where that star. It's in the constellation, the Northern Crown, Corona Borealis. I didn't realize that it was that low. I thought it was still okay in our sky. But, of course, it will be going away as we go around the sun. Certain constellations get lower and lower every night until they're washed out and they're out during the day. So, yeah.
And that one, if it'll go away, but will it reappear at some point? Is what Jeff's wondering.
Yeah, it in 80 years.
Oh well.
once it bursts, and again, their best prediction is it will be in the next month or so, and they know that by studying its change. It's little bits of change in brightness and compare them to 80 years ago, right before it burst, and we could see it really well. And when it does burst, we'll be able to see it with our naked eyes for a few days and binoculars maybe a little bit longer, and then it'll fade away again for 80 years.
Really cool. Jupiter is rising earlier each night.
That's right. Jupiter is. Saturn is up right now, right when it gets dark. And it will be till the end of the year. But Jupiter is rising earlier every night. It's going to reach what we call opposition. It's closest distance to the Earth because it's on the exact opposite side of the sun from us. So it's highest at midnight, and it's up all night. And that's in a month or two. But right now, if you go outside, not too long after it gets dark, Jupiter will be coming up. And again, Jupiter is a wonderful thing to look at in binoculars. Instead of looking like a star, you can actually tell it's a little ball. And you can't do that with any star. They're so far away that even the biggest telescopes in the world can't really see anything more than a point of light when they look at a star. And it's a few stars they can, but not many. But Jupiter, you can see it looks like a ball. And even through small binoculars, you can see four of its moons.
It has like 95 moons.
95 moons. And Saturn has over 150. So they used to compete, but it seems like that's done. And in a way, the rings of Saturn, it's made up of gazillions of little things. Are they moons? I don't know. So, yeah, but both of them are in the evening sky, another reason to look up. Through binoculars, Saturn won't show you much. You might be able to tell that it's not round, but not much more.
Might be able to see those moons of Jupiter.
Of Jupiter, you definitely can. I forgot to look, but I'm wondering, the largest moon in the solar system is Titan. And I hope I'm not wrong. It's it's a moon of Saturn, and it's so big, it has an atmosphere. And we are sending, or we're working on it anyway, a helicopter to Titan. Think about that.
Wow.
Now, the atmosphere there, it isn't oxygen and nitrogen like ours, but who cares? It's air in a way. You can fly airplanes and helicopters in it. Its atmosphere is thicker than Earth's, and its gravity is like 1/8 of Earth's, or some, I don't know, 1/5, something like that. It's way less than ours. Oh, yeah, it's like, I think it's 18%. So flying there is way easier here. So that's the plan. And then there's also people are like, we ought to send boats and submarines there too, because there's lakes and seas. And I was like, yeah, let's do it.
Dot in Manitowoc has something. Well, let's go there. Hi, Dot.
Hello. Good morning. I would like to know if your guest would like to go to the moon, be an astronaut, and actually walk on the moon.
Oh.
Duh. Yes, I absolutely would. I travel the state with a portable planetarium, and I do programs at schools and libraries, and I work with kids. And this year, the summer library program was Adventure Begins at Your Library. So I talked about adventures in space, and I talked about going to the moon. Neil and Buzz walked on the moon when I was 9, and I wanted to be an astronaut since the day I knew what an astronaut was. And if they said to me, Paul, would you like to go to the moon? I would just shake my head. Well, yeah. Or just, I don't know, though, that I'd want to be one of those folks who just goes up in these, you have to be a billionaire to do it. But you go up in a spacecraft, you're up there for 3 minutes, or a couple of them were up for a few days, and then you come home. It's so expensive to put people in space. I'd rather they send somebody who could actually do some science. I love science, but I'm not a professional scientist. So,
what did you think of the movie? And I'm trying to remember of the guy on Mars.
Oh, The Martian. I didn't see it, and I'm going to tell you why. Because the reason that there's trouble on Mars in that movie and the book is because there's a big old storm and it causes damage. Well, there are huge dust storms on Mars, but the atmosphere is 1% of Earth's. There's no dust storm on Mars that's going to throw big rocks. It's just, it's not going to happen. And I know it was just for the movie, but I saw that and I went, that's a nope for me. No thanks. I know there are people who are like, hey, I love that. And that's okay. It got people into science, but
I like the movie a
yeah.
lot.
Yeah.
I thought it was a lot of fun.
Yeah, I bet it was, but that's the kind of guy I am. I have a hard time with that.
Oh, man. Paul Kinzer, our guest today, author of Stargazing Basics, Getting Started in Recreational Astronomy. Questions, give a call. The number is 800-642-1234, or you can email to talk@WPR.org. I'm Larry Mueller for WPR News. Tomorrow on the Larry Mueller Show, we'll talk about buying and selling a home as our interest rates start to fall. We'll also get some advice for renters. That's tomorrow on the Larry Mueller Show. Right now, we're talking about astronomy with our guest, Paul Kinzer, author of Stargazing Basics, Getting Started in Recreational Astronomy, member of the La Crosse Area Astronomy Club as well. Questions, still time, give a call. The number is 800-642-1234, or you could email us, the email address, talk@WPR.org. That's talk@WPR.org. I wanted to talk a little about star clusters. Much We've got the Pleiades, known as the cluster known as Seven Sisters.
Yeah.
What's significant about it?
It's pretty. It's beautiful. It's something that you can see also from almost everywhere in the world that has people. Because it's fairly close to the equator in the sky, so people in the south and the north can see it. And it's coming up earlier every night. Right now, it rises not too long after dark. By Halloween, it'll be high enough to see at like 8:30 or 9 in the eastern sky. What it is it's a group of stars that formed about 100 million years ago, very close to each other. And they're still pretty close to each other. So if you see it with your naked eye, people with good eyes, people unlike me, can see about 6 stars. There are people with amazing eyes who can see up to 14. But with a pair of binoculars, you can see dozens of stars, most of them a nice bright blue. And there's a little bit of a pattern to it. And it's just a gorgeous thing to look at, especially when you know that it's hundreds of light years away.
It's 430 light years away. Light years.
A light year is how far light travels in 1 year. People often think a light year is time because of the word year, but it's actually a distance. Light travels 186,000 miles in 1 second. It can get here from the moon in 1 1/3 seconds. Well, that means it travels almost 6 million miles in 1 year. And this star cluster is 430 light years away. And we can see it with our eyes. So when you look at it, it's cool to think those are stars like ours. And what would it be like if we lived on a planet in amongst all those stars so close together? And it took that light 400 and some years to get here. I just now had the thought, if you looked at them tonight, the light that left them just a few years before the telescope was invented. That's pretty cool to me. Yeah,
that is very cool. Bill in Hayward has a question for you. Bill, thank you for calling.
Thank you for having me. Hey, I have a question about the dark side of the moon. Is the dark side of the moon always the dark side, or is there any rotation on the moon at all?
Yes, that's a good question. The moon rotates, but it rotates in the exact or almost exact same amount of time it takes to go around the Earth. The moon goes around us once a month. It spins around once a month. What does that mean? It means that all the time, the same side is aiming at us. When there's a new moon, the dark side, people call it the dark side. The better thing to call it is the far side. We never see it here on Earth. But when we have a new moon and we can't see the moon, well, the sun is shining on the other side of the moon. It's a full moon for the far side when it's a new moon for us. And when it's a full moon for us, it's a new moon for the far side. So the far side gets just as much sun as the near side. I know it's kind of hard to imagine, but if you have two people, have one of them stand still and the other one walk in a circle around them with a light behind him. And you'll see that as he's walking around facing you, sometimes that light will hit his face, and sometimes it'll hit the back of his head.
Yeah. And we have, as long as we're on the moon, Bill, thanks a lot for calling. We had a total solar eclipse seen by millions of people. It was last April.
Oh, yeah.
And there will be an annular eclipse, which will be available, I think, South America and Antarctica, maybe?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
What's an annular?
An annular eclipse, the moon, again, remember, the moon is sometimes farther from the Earth and sometimes closer. When there's a total solar eclipse, what happens is the moon, which is 400 times closer to the Earth than the sun, well, it just so happens the sun is 400 times the diameter of the moon. So they look the same size in our sky. Well, when we had the total solar eclipse back in April, which I got to see, yay, I went to Southern Illinois, then the moon was close enough to the Earth that it totally blocked the sun. During an annular, the word annular means ring, just like a ring on your finger, you see a ring of sunlight around the moon because the moon is so far away, it doesn't completely block the sun. So that's what an annular eclipse is.
I think they can see it. We'll be able to see it if you travel quickly to Hawaii.
Yeah, right, yeah.
And we've got hunter's moons, beaver's moons,
yeah.
And cold moon, I think, is December.
Yeah, it? And the harvest moon, to me, is one of the ones that really lives up to its name. It's more than just a name people gave it. Long ago, the harvest moon is the full moon closest to the fall equinox. And people out there harvesting their fields, yay, there's a full moon. We get some time. We can actually be out here after dark. And that's the one we just had last week. We had the harvest moon. And the cool thing about last week was there was a very, very tiny partial lunar eclipse. A little bit was shaved off the top by the Earth's shadow. And I had friends over for a campfire in our backyard. And my wife a few days later said, hey, you didn't tell us about that. And I'm like, I didn't remember it, which can happen. So
what's the next closest galaxy? We've got...
The next closest large galaxy is the Andromeda Galaxy, and it's called Andromeda because it's in the constellation Andromeda, who is famous in mythology. She's the daughter of Cepheus and Cassiopeia, but we don't need to get into that. If you... can get away from town lights. I can see this from my backyard if I know when to look. If you see Cassiopeia, she is a constellation. It looks like a big M or W. It's basically two triangles next to each other. If you use the triangle that's less flat as an arrow pointing away from the Big Dipper, you know, look it up. You can find this. If you use that as an arrowhead with a pair of binoculars and you slide your binoculars about 2.5 diameters of that triangle away, you'll see a little fuzzy blob. And that little fuzzy blob is the center of the nearest spiral big galaxy to us. And that little fuzzy blob is tens of billions of stars. And the light hitting your eye left them 2.5 million years ago. There aren't things that I usually consider mind-blowing, but that's one. Yeah.
Well, we're starting to run out of time here, but you told me about a NASA experiment.
Oh, yeah.
That's something we can probably many of us would be able to see.
Yeah, and you may be able to look this up. I know there are sites that will tell you where certain satellites are. NASA launched something a while ago. It's an experimental solar sail. The light from the sun actually exerts some pressure. And if you have a sail big enough, made of something thin and shiny and light enough, it can get pushed by sunlight. And unlike rocket fuel that you have to take with you, sunlight's there all the time. So it would take a long time to speed you up, but you could get going really fast. Well, right now there's one up there. They unrolled this sail. It's up there right now, and they haven't turned on its little engine yet. So it's just sort of flipping around up there. And last week, I was looking up at the sky. I didn't even know about this yet. And suddenly, going across the sky, a star, it looked like a star appeared and got brighter and brighter and brighter as it moved across the sky. And then it got dimmer and dimmer and dimmer and went away. And it was the next day I found out it was that solar sail just sort of rotating around. So I hope I get to see it again. It was cool.
Well, I tell you what, it's been cool having you with us, Paul.
Yeah, I love it.
It's always a pleasure. Thank you so much.
Sure.
We'll do it again with Paul Kinzer. He is the author of Stargazing Basics, Getting Started in Recreational Astronomy. It's a wonderful book, by the way. He's also a member of the La Crosse Area Astronomy Club. So great to have him with us. And there's another guy I bet spent a lot of time looking up at the stars. His name is Kerry Siegel, and he's got a book. It's called A Talk in the Woods, Voices Along the Appalachian Trail. And we'll talk with him next. I'm Larry Mueller for WPR News.